Senhoras e senhores deputados, vamos dar início à nossa reunião. Temos hoje connosco o senhor embaixador de Malta, José Filetti, a quem agradecemos a vinda e a disponibilidade para nos apresentar hoje os objetivos e prioridades da presidência maltesa do Conselho da União Europeia. Agradecemos também à equipa que o acompanha e damos as boas-vindas. Estamos no início de um novo semestre da presidência da União Europeia, com prioridades já definidas para esta presidência, e teremos todo o interesse em ouvir o senhor embaixador relativamente a estes objetivos e prioridades. Estamos no início de um ano com muitos desafios ao nível do continente europeu e do mundo. Temos desafios muito identificados no nosso continente europeu, designadamente na União Europeia, e temos uma presidência de Malta que terá a ambição de, neste primeiro semestre, fazer e dar respostas a estes desafios. Vamos fazer, como foi previamente falado, uma ronda após uma intervenção do Sr. Embaixador, que fará uma intervenção oral e depois uma intervenção que suportará com uma apresentação recorrendo a PowerPoint. Depois haverá uma ronda, Srs. Deputados, como ia dizendo, que não terá limite de tempo de intervenção, de maneira a que o Sr. Deputado, de acordo com as perguntas que são feitas, avaliar se responderá pessoalmente, individualmente, a cada pergunta, ou se fará respostas conjuntas ou agrupadas. Faremos então depois a avaliação, de acordo com aquilo que for a vontade dos senhores deputados, de haver uma ou outra questão que queiram colocar ao senhor embaixador. Para já, senhor embaixador, tem a palavra para a apresentação. You have the floor. Thank you very much.
Shall I keep on sitting down or and this is your name?
Regina Bastos.
Thank you, Madame Bastos. I will speak a bit more slowly than usual because we have a translator who has accepted to translate my English rendition into Portuguese. First of all, I thank you for giving me again the possibility of visiting your beautiful country, and more particularly your beautiful Lisbon, which is a really a quaint city, full of history, and in a way it reminds me of my country as well. The main purpose of this visit here, upon your invitation, is to present to you Malta's priorities during our presidency, which was officially inaugurated last week on the 11th of January, and which will proceed until the end of June 2017. I propose that we conduct this exchange of views, first of all by showing you a very short video presentation in color and in English. It is under 3 minutes, which encapsulates what the priority is all about, and afterwards I would have the possibility of explaining in a more elaborate way, but again, not in a very long way, in terms of time, our priorities. And then I look forward to for an exchange of views. When I said an exchange of views, because when I was first invited, the word that was used, that I was going to come here before you for a grilling. Now, and my first reaction was that I am not a hamburger to be grilled, and secondly, I don't want to finish up as St. Lawrence as a martyr to be grilled as well. So I come here as my country's representative. I come here as a friend of Portugal, and so therefore, after the video presentation, there will be my presentation, which will take more or less a quarter of an hour. Then there will be this exchange of views, because I would want to hear what you have to tell me, because what you tell me, I promise you that I will pass to my authorities in Valletta. We need to know what your immediate concerns are. And after, by way of a conclusion, if we have the time, I just want to have just 2 minutes, not more, with 10 slides, with some historical aspects, just 10 slides, Portugal and Malta, the links between us, but a scene from the Portuguese side and not from the Maltese side. So, if with your permission, we can start with the video presentation. Thank you.
European Union, the powerful body that sets the agenda for the EU's lawmaking and screens all new legislation. Malta may be the smallest nation in the 28-member bloc, but it has an ambitious to-do list that it hopes will bring the EU closer to its people and tackle some of their most pressing concerns. Getting a grip on migration and asylum is one of the top priorities, and Malta aims to bolster existing systems and achieve progress on new initiatives. Malta has also said it wants to strengthen the EU single market, a huge free trade area that many regard as the EU's greatest asset. Measures on the table include a final end to mobile phone roaming charges and tearing down the digital fences that stop some EU citizens from buying goods and services from other EU nations, a practice known as geo-blocking. A decisive response to increasing security threats is also on the agenda, as Malta looks to achieve significant progress on initiatives aimed at better managing our borders. The tiny island state has long punched above its weight in building an inclusive society, and Malta will use the presidency to help women to get a fair deal in the labour market and to ramp up efforts to combat gender-based violence. Valletta has pledged a ministerial-level conference on issues impacting people of all sexual orientations and gender identities to push ahead more quickly on the European Commission's existing roadmap. Conscious of the challenges facing its neighbours in the southern Mediterranean region, Malta is looking to lead on bolstering security and democracy in the region, with a particular focus on Libya and Tunisia. And finally, as befits an island nation, Malta will be looking to the sea and to ensuring not only the sustainability of our oceans, but also effective governance to promote growth in the areas such as maritime tourism and sea freight. The Maltese presidency has just 6 months to make inroads into all these fields, but there is no doubting the ambition, planning and energy behind this program will see Malta truly come of age as a committed EU member.
So, I hope you like the video, which encapsulates more or less what I have to talk to you about. Our priorities were devised in conjunction with two other member states of the European Union, the two past presidents, namely the Netherlands and Slovakia, what is called the TRIO, so their program is called the TRIO program, and it seeks to factor on dossiers that are especially important to the European Union. And when we talk about priorities for Malta, it means that out of these dossiers, we are especially focusing, because we feel they are more important than other areas to us, and to the other member states as well. And these priorities are six in number. The fact that I am going to mention them one after the other, second, third, fourth, etc., doesn't mean that the second one is less important than the first one. It does not even mean that there might not be other priorities equally important than the ones I am talking about. But for us, we have identified six priorities, which are migration. This comes as no surprise to anyone. The second priority is the single market, matters of security. Then we come to the social side, social inclusion, Europe's neighborhood, and finally something from a different aspect now, not usually talked about, but it is very important both for us as an island surrounded by the sea, and equally important for your country, Portugal, which has a sea on the Atlantic, a window on the Atlantic, a large one, and also on the Mediterranean, which we share. Now, the overall aim in mentioning and choosing these priorities is not to reinvent the wheel. Our aim, and it is the theme of our presidency, is one of a reunion. And by that, I mean reconnecting the citizens of the EU at individual, corporate, and state levels with one another, with their respective government, with the Union itself, and with the international community as a whole. Because we feel that there are legitimate expectations by the average European citizen within the EU, and these legitimate expectations have got to be met as far as possible in a concrete way. It's all right for me talking in the abstract, and when I say me, I mean the various governments, or the Union itself, or the European Commission, but we want to have something more concrete by way of achievements, by way of results. And with that, I'll pass on to the first aspect, which is migration. And as far as migration is concerned, here the objectives are twofold. The swift implementation of those measures that have already been agreed upon, because we know that in spite of decisions that were taken, some states have recognized that they've got to implement them, as Malta did, as Portugal has done, but there are other states who are taking matters very slowly, and there are other states, member states, who are actually refusing to go ahead and implement certain decisions regarding especially the relocation of these migrants. And the second objective is that the issue of migration remains at the top of the political agenda, at least during these 6 months. It is a problem, not ours in the making, but it is there, and it is not going to leave us very easily. And for this to be done, we have to concentrate our combined efforts. Your effort as well is needed, just as the efforts of the other 26 member states, in four areas. The areas are asylum, external border management, the external dimension of migration, the points of origin, in other words, and focus legislation on what is called legal migration, as distinct from irregular, which at times is not so irregular, but actually it is illegal as well. We've got to distinguish, whether we like it or not, between asylum seekers and refugees and the economic migrants. Economic migrants that come to Europe without any documentation, without any papers at all, seeking a better life. But this has got to be somehow controlled and checked. So we mean to strengthen and streamline what is called the Common European Asylum System, so that the distribution of migration and the load and the onus that it has, that it carries, be better shared in a more equitable way between the various member states. And for this to happen, you need to have another view, serious view, by way of trying to revise what are called the Dublin Regulation or the Dublin Rules, which in very simple words, it means that as soon as migrants arrive in a particular area, they have to be kept in the nearest, safest port that can hold them. Now, these rules were devised when there wasn't a crisis on, where you had 10, 15, 20 migrants arriving, but now we're having thousands upon thousands. And as our Prime Minister had occasion to state only the other week in the European Parliament in Strasbourg, unless something is done in the very short term, come April this year, there will be another big influx of migrants crossing the Mediterranean from North Africa to Europe. Italy alone, which like us is a frontline country, has had to take in 1 year 185,000 of these migrants, which is almost a little less than half of the population of my country. So if these were to touch port for the first time in Malta, it means that we have to keep them until they are relocated. And if there are states who do not want to take any of these migrants, it means that they have to stay in Malta, as they are staying now in Italy. But there are other areas which we can improve, and one of them, in a very concrete way, is to transform the office called the European Asylum System Office, and we propose to turn it into an agency. So it means that we've got to reform the common European asylum system. And as I said, all this can take place providing that those measures that have been agreed upon are implemented, especially relocation decisions, especially keeping a monitor on those areas called hotspots, like Greece, like Libya, and so on. And we keep on using the EU resources by way of the deployment of experts, something which is already being done. And another area is to follow up what was decided in the Valletta Summit on migration. Now, the Valletta Summit on migration means that you've got to tackle the root causes of migration. It is not enough to provide to these migrants once they arrive in Europe. The ideal would be to try to solve problems in those states from where they originate. And to do this, you need funds, and the Valletta Summit aims at providing suitable funds to cater for these problems. This brings me to the single market, which we consider to be the Union's greatest asset. And we are looking for a renewed focus on Europe from this angle, because if we manage to use better the single market and develop what is called the digital single market, and complete the process towards having an internal energy market, we will bring tangible benefits, we hope, to our economies, to our businesses, and to our families. And this can be achieved in a very general way, of course, by removing barriers to trade and improving the protection and access to services for the consumer. So our aim is to conclude those files, those dossiers, key legislation, which is already being negotiated, but which has not been as yet concluded. And when you have this strategy, the single market strategy in place, it will serve, and this is something which should be interesting to you, new jobs, promote productivity, and ensure that there is an attractive climate for investment and innovation. And by way of concrete objectives, something which has already been mentioned in the video, is to end roaming charges throughout Europe so that citizens can stay in touch when they travel. I've got my mobile here, which is paid for by my government. I can phone, but I cannot see what the temperature in Lisbon is, because as soon as I come out of from France, where I'm presently residing, the Council of Europe, it is blocked in Strasbourg, and the weather when I left last Sunday, it was fog and it was -11, and it is still blocked. When I enter France, it will start activate itself by way of telling me how matters stand. This is called geo-blocking, and this we are aiming to eliminate it as much as possible. In other words, end roaming charges, as well as remove barriers to what is called e-commerce, so that consumers in one country, whether online or in person, as tourists or as visitors, they are not discriminated against in terms of the prices that they have to pay. They should not pay more because they are traveling from one member state to another. And the sales or payment conditions, that they might vary. So in other words, ensure a sharper focus in EU laws in various aspects, and that would include challenges faced by small and medium-sized enterprises, the SMEs. All this means that growth, economic growth and jobs remains an overarching priority as far as Malta is concerned, and it should be something which you, Portugal, looks forward to having. And by way of something concrete, the European Fund for Strategic Investment will have to be utilized to mobilize private investment while making smart use of what are called scarce budgetary resources. Those resources in the budget that are not being well spent, they should be channeled to produce the results that we are aiming to improve. So we mean to review the energy efficiency package, which aims to reduce energy consumption in homes and in industries. We strengthen the energy supply in times of crisis. We facilitate what is called cross-border portability by allowing consumers, for example, to enjoy home subscription in their televisions, in their e-apparatus. Reassign, for example, high-speed megahertz used for digital TV broadcasting, and so on. So the idea, one of the ideas that we hope to achieve is to provide free Wi-Fi in every town, in every village, in every city in Europe. And I hope that we succeed. We now pass on to matters of security. Fortunately, and I hope it will remain so, both my country, Malta, and Portugal have not been that much directly affected by terrorist acts. I mean, we had a hijack attempt, which in the end promised resulted was a fake one, but the threat was there. But we did not undergo the very harsh experiences that France has undergone, for example. If you go in France, you have armed military crossing the road all the time, roaming about in the streets, quite understandably so. I noticed the same thing here in Lisbon yesterday, because by way of preventive measures that has got to be done. But the point that we want to stress and to eliminate is that terror must not be allowed to reign in Europe. And we feel that Europe and its citizens deserve that they should feel safe and not under a threat of some terrorist attack. In other words, Europe must remain vigilant to ensure the security of all its citizens. And by way of concrete objectives, we've got to continue action on combating terrorism. We continue the fight against organized crime. And organized crime can take various forms. We talk, for example, about human trafficking, which usually is linked with sexual exploitation of persons, but we should also aim at other aspects of this human trafficking, which is human smuggling. They are related crimes, but they are different, because in human trafficking, the person that is the victim, the one that is exploited, is always at the mercy and under the being monitored by the person who is sending him or her to be exploited. And he gets money out of it. But in the case of human smuggling, all these migrants that cross from North Africa to Europe, for example, the one who is exploiting these persons has no interest whatsoever in these and his victims. If they perish at sea, 5,000 perished in 1 year alone last year, and 4,000 the previous year. So there was an increase of 25%. If they perish, if they drown, the better for him. He would have collected the money, and there would be no other problems for him. So we've got to find a way how to fight organized crime. We've got to follow the EU roadmap to enhance, this is very important and it can be done, exchange of information. We've got to provide solutions which are interoperable, to provide databases which are used by national law and border management authorities. And by doing so, we are not just hitting at organized crime, but we are also reaching certain negative aspects of migration as well, and our fight against terrorism. Continue the action to fight against the terrorist financing through various legislative files, which includes an agreement on what is called the Fourth Anti-Money Laundering Directive. And then, of course, we've got to strengthen internal security in various ways. I need not enter into all the all details, the European Public Prosecutor Office, Eurojust, Interpol, and so on. The idea is to better protect you, myself, the rest of Europe, the European citizen against international criminal activities, which, as I said, can include trafficking, terrorism, and money laundering. This brings us to the fourth priority. Europe is not just the economic world. It's not about having austerity measures being imposed on countries, as you very well know, but Europe also should have a soul, a social dimension, and we feel that social inclusion is part of this. So we need to have a social policy, which is something that the Maltese government holds very dear. It is an area where we hope to share our positive experience and results with all our European partners. And for this to be done, the work will be guided by close consultation with the stakeholders, the social partners, with the civil society, and the citizens in order to advance, for example, gender equality, the rights of minorities and vulnerable groups, children, persons without a home, and so on. And by way of concrete objectives, for example, we have identified improving gender balance, the participation of women in the labor market, for example, and which would include finalizing the proposal for a directive on improving gender balance among director of companies, those companies listed on the stock exchange, by way of a beginning. See how many women are directors of companies, big companies, and you'll find very little. And this imbalance we hope to address and we hope to redress. Similarly, we've got to combat violence based on gender, gender-based violence. And part of our exercise is to promote what is called best practices, your experiences, the Maltese experience, the French experience. We exchange information about our practices, our existing legislations, our policies, our strategies, and this has got to be based on updated statistical data and research. And we propose for February of holding at ministerial level a conference in Valletta, in Malta, on issues relating to LGBTIQ. This meeting, this conference, is aimed to further explore the Commission's roadmap in the area of social inclusion. Then the fifth area, which is of particular interest to Portugal as well, is what we call Europe's neighborhood. Because, as I had occasion to state a few moments ago, the security of Europe and the prosperity of Europe is linked with our neighbors. If our neighbors are suffering economic burdens, they have no work, all this presents challenges to us because they have ripple effects, as you have in water and rivers, ripple effects of instability beyond their shores. And the EU has already developed what is called the EU Global Strategy. And this strategy will be important by way of reference to us to determine, to see how the European Union should be more relevant and an effective player. So our aim here is to ensure what we have called democratic legitimacy and security in our neighborhood. We shall try and help neighboring countries to reach a level of democratic stability, so democratic legitimacy we call it, and they are secure, because unless they are secure, there is this danger that what is happening there will be felt also in Europe. So particular attention will be paid to the European Union's southern neighborhood. I know that Portugal is very active in this regard. Yesterday I visited a center here at the center of Lisbon. It's called the North-South Center. It forms part of the Council of Europe, but it is also well-funded by the European Union, and it seeks to administer and devise and implement education programs to youth and to other groups, women and so on, in Tunisia and other areas as a way of helping our neighbors. And in fact, I mentioned that we've got to ensure that democratic transition in Tunisia remains on track, because it is indeed tragic to have a country after the Spring Revolution trying its best to live as a free and democratic state, only to be stopped by a number of attempts each and every time it reaches a certain stage or level of democratic freedom. We've got to help our neighbors, and therefore we've got to extend as much as possible our international efforts, even as far as Syria. You know that Madame Mogherini, the Minister for Foreign Affairs, the representative for Foreign Affairs of the EU, does her best with the help of all the other member states. And we've got to deepen our relationship, which exists between the Union and the League of Arab States. And our presidency will also seek to revitalize, if that is possible, relations with the Gulf Cooperation Council. Of course, when we talk about Europe's neighborhood, we don't have, and we should not limit ourselves to Southern Europe, to which we all belong here, but we've got to keep an eye also on what is happening in Eastern Europe. So Eastern European neighborhood will remain important. We've got to follow closely what is taking place in the Ukraine, ensuring cooperation with the Russian Federation, and not trying to isolate or create a barrier between us and other groups on issues of global and regional concern. And this brings me to the last sector, which is the maritime sector, which is something not usually talked about, but which, as I said, is of particular interest not only for Malta, which is an island surrounded by sea, but also for Portugal, with a great window towards the Atlantic and another one facing the Mediterranean Sea. And the idea here is to place ocean governance on our agenda, to have an EU policy on what we call oceans sustainability. And to do this, you've got to develop in a better way the maritime sector. There is already in place the EU integrated maritime policy. So to do this, you've got to encourage research, you've got to encourage commercial activities that could be developed into high value-added jobs, job opportunities, in line with what is called the Blue Growth Initiative. So the idea, by way of concrete objectives, is ocean governance at international level, to have a more comprehensive policy to improve the international ocean governance framework. And we see that our oceans are sustainable. There is what is called the Western Mediterranean Sea Basin Strategy, and this strategy is expected to be launched early in 2017. And I would understand that by saying Western Mediterranean, it means nearer home as far as Portugal is concerned. So this strategy will build on structures that have already been put into place within the context of the blue economy. And we call it the blue economy not because our seas are blue, but because we realize that something like 90% of our oceans, the seabed, remains unchartered, for example. And so you need what is called the EU Blue Data Network. It's a network based on observation, based on data exchanges, which provide research, marine research, that this research should be accessible to all. And the idea is therefore to have a call for international cooperation to protect our oceans and develop the potential of this blue economy in three areas: energy, biotechnologies, and tourism, coastal tourism. So, in a nutshell, when we talk about the blue economy, we are saying reduce human pressure on the oceans and encourage research. We just had the signing and agreement of the Paris Climate Agreement, which has come into force. We will have to see whether the new U.S. administration, how does it look about this idea of Paris climate. I hope it will remain in place. Remember that oceans cover some 70% of the surface of the planet, but we use them for only 3% of our economic activity. We can pass on to the next stage. More or less, that's what I had to say by way of priorities. Naturally, we have to hold a number of, quite a large number of events, chair a number of activities related to the EU program and work. But in terms of high-level events, I just mentioned just some of them. We have started with the opening ceremony in Valletta, that's our capital city, on the 11th of January, where we also had a meeting of the College of the Commissioners with the participation of the President Jean-Claude Juncker. This will be followed on February the 3rd with an informal summit meeting of 27 heads of state or government. Another informal meeting of the Strategic Committee on Immigration, Frontiers and Asylum, 16th and 17th of February. Also in February, high-level ministerial conference on LGBTIQ issues. In March, will be devoted to the 60th anniversary and ancillary celebrations to commemorate the Treaty of Rome, which more or less these events take place between the 24th and the 26th of March. They will be celebrated both in our capital, but on the 25th of March, there are joint preparations at hand with Italy to celebrate the anniversary. This is in March, 25th of March in Rome. Of course, the European Parliament will meet regularly, and as far as the European Council is concerned, there will be a meeting which is programmed for the 8th and 10th of March, and again another one between the 22nd and the 23rd of June in Brussels. We do not live on bread alone. We have organized a number of cultural events as well. Well, as far as Strasbourg is concerned, we are going to have a piano concert, and I understand that a similar activity by way of a piano concert by Maltese pianists is going to be held also here in Lisbon. You are free to visit our official website if you want more detail. I mean, this can be easily accessed, and you will be kept updated with what is taking place all throughout these 6 months. And perhaps I can stop now for the moment, and I leave you some time to react to what I have said. But as I said, I would want to know what your concerns are. I have read about them, but coming from you, I feel even closer to your concerns, which I will promise you to pass them on to my authorities in Valletta. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ambassador Joseph Filetti, for your so clear and complete presentation of the 6 priorities of Malta EU presidency. We have now the questions of our MEPs to you. So, as perguntas poderão ser respondidas individualmente ou em conjunto, ou por grupos, conforme aquilo que o Sr. Embaixador entender conveniente à medida que vai ouvindo as perguntas. Tem a palavra o Sr. Deputado do PSD, Miguel Morgado.
Obrigado, Sra. Presidente. Senhor Embaixador, em nome do PSD dou-lhe as boas-vindas também a Portugal e aqui ao Parlamento Português e agradeço-lhe naturalmente a exposição que fez sobre as prioridades da Presidência de Malta. Evidentemente que nas prioridades que expôs aqui, genericamente elas acolhem o nosso favor, o nosso apoio e evidentemente que há aqui também aspectos de ênfase que têm alguma originalidade e que também Portugal e o PSD certamente apoiam, como é o caso do sublinhado que é dado à questão dos oceanos e à questão do mar e da economia azul. No entanto, e como é do seu interesse, como explicitou aqui várias vezes, ouvir as nossas preocupações e aquelas que são as nossas prioridades, neste caso falo evidentemente só pelo Partido Social Democrata, queria então rapidamente dar-lhe conta de quais são as nossas prioridades e, enfim, também pedir-lhe alguma clarificação sobre alguns pontos que não ficaram suficientemente claros quando estamos a tentar estabelecer precisamente prioridades de ação para os próximos 6 meses e também para o ano 2017. Então, teria de começar por um ponto que para nós é obrigatório e goza certamente da característica de uma prioridade e lamentar que neste conjunto de prioridades da Presidência Maltesa não haja uma única referência à reforma da arquitetura da União Económica e Monetária. Lamento e estranho também, na medida em que Malta, tal como Portugal, é um país da zona euro, partilhamos a mesma moeda, mas o diagnóstico que nós fazemos, desde o início da crise da zona euro, é que existem ainda lacunas importantes na arquitetura institucional da moeda única, que penalizam sobretudo países como Portugal. Eu não preciso me alongar sobre isso, toda a gente conhece a história, mas para que o Sr. Embaixador também saiba, nós fizemos em 2015 uma reforma detalhada e abrangente, ou uma proposta de reforma detalhada e abrangente para uma reforma possível da arquitetura da zona euro, que passaria pela criação de um fundo monetário europeu, que incluiria funções como naturalmente a absorção do atual mecanismo europeu de estabilidade e, portanto, teria funções de estabilização das economias dos Estados-membros, mas também institucionalize, se pudesse ser assim, um mecanismo orçamental de afetação de recursos que podiam ser concretizados através de políticas como um mecanismo europeu de atribuição de subsídio europeu, uma atribuição parcial de um subsídio de desemprego ao nível europeu. Eu constato que a discussão em torno de um possível Fundo Monetário Europeu no futuro começa a subir de tom, e isso a nós agrada-nos. Um dos candidatos à presidência francesa fez questão de mencionar essa possibilidade, assim como um governo importante, como o governo alemão, também já abordou essa possibilidade, embora em termos algo diferentes daquela que é a nossa proposta, mas seria importante que a presidência maltesa também abraçasse como sua essa proposta de reforma, que para nós é essencial. Relativamente ao mercado único, evidentemente que nós acompanhamos a preocupação de Malta com o aprofundamento do mercado único, mas, no entanto, gostaríamos de sublinhar que as propostas de aprofundamento do mercado único, que a nosso ver seriam mais proveitosas para criar, uma vez mais na Europa, um espaço de convergência económica, de aumento de produtividade, de aumento de prosperidade dos povos europeus, passaria por exemplo, na questão energética e na União Energética em particular, não só atender aos problemas da eficiência energética, do consumo doméstico e do consumo industrial, mas também, e isso é um ponto muito caro a Portugal, de garantir que a União Energética será efetivamente uma união, não deixando que a Península Ibérica esteja excluída desse mercado único de energia, que é a situação atual, e, portanto, a questão das interligações com o território francês são muito importantes para nós. A Comissão Europeia tem a incumbência de monitorizar o acordo que foi feito há 3 anos entre os governos espanhol, português e francês E sem o cumprimento desse acordo a médio e longo prazo não haverá uma União Energética na Europa, que devia ser contextualizada pela Presidência de Malta em termos ambiciosos, na medida em que é preciso diversificar geograficamente o abastecimento energético do mercado europeu, ainda hoje excessivamente dependente da fronteira oriental, como sabemos. Se Portugal e Espanha não estiverem devidamente integrados no mercado energético europeu, então esse desígnio estratégico de longo prazo na Europa nunca poderá ser devidamente conseguido. Portanto, gostaria de reforçar que, no que diz respeito à União Energética, do ponto de vista do Partido Social Democrata, essa seria uma prioridade concreta a ter em conta. Foi mencionada também a questão da União do Mercado de Capitais, e aqui gostaríamos de sublinhar que, sem haver uma discussão legislativa de harmonização, por exemplo, dos mecanismos de insolvência e de recuperação de empresas ao nível europeu, a União do Mercado de Capitais nunca se concretizará para benefício das pequenas e médias empresas dos países chamados periféricos ou países mais vulneráveis às questões de financiamento, como é o caso, por exemplo, de Portugal, mas não só. Quero também sublinhar que estranhamos e lamentamos a omissão do aprofundamento de um aspecto crucial do mercado interno que corre pelo nome de União Bancária. Para nós é fulcral que o terceiro pilar da União Bancária seja concretizado o mais rapidamente possível. Recordo que esse terceiro pilar é a criação de um mecanismo de seguro dos depósitos dos bancos europeus, um mecanismo comum europeu. Essa discussão está a ser sucessivamente adiada no Conselho Europeu e, a nosso ver, isso retarda não só a conclusão da União Bancária, como pode ter ou pode criar efeitos perversos do estabelecimento dos dois primeiros pilares dessa mesma União Bancária. E, nesse aspecto, não posso deixar de lamentar a omissão na lista de prioridades da presidência maltesa. Passando às questões relativas à política externa, que também, a política externa da Europa, que nós consideramos também muito importantes. Há um enfoque bastante compreensível na política de vizinhança europeia por parte da presidência europeia, da maltesa, e nós apoiamos, evidentemente, essa ênfase. Gostaria, no entanto, de pedir o seguinte esclarecimento. Um esclarecimento que eu tenho pedido não só ao governo português, mas a outros representantes de instituições europeias, quando tenho a possibilidade de os interpelar. Se este objetivo genérico, como o Sr. Embaixador mencionou, de abordar, de atacar as raízes destas vagas migratórias, se isto for para levar a sério, então nós precisamos de saber qual é o plano, ou se não houver um plano, qual é a ideia, neste caso da presidência maltesa, mas das restantes instituições europeias, para proceder a esse ataque das causas que estão na raiz destes movimentos. E, portanto, se se mencionou a questão da Líbia, é preciso também mencionar a questão da Síria e fazer uma pergunta que tem de ser mais tarde ou mais cedo respondida pelas instâncias europeias e que, lamentavelmente, ano após ano não é respondida. Qual é o plano que a Europa tem para trazer estabilidade à Síria e à Líbia? Era importante colocar a pergunta e a Europa foge sistematicamente dessa pergunta, o que dá a ideia que a Europa ficará contente com aquilo que a Rússia, os Estados Unidos, a Turquia, a Arábia Saudita, porventura decidirem ou na mesa de negociações ou no campo de batalha. Ainda relativamente à questão da vizinhança europeia, eu ouvi-o falar da fronteira leste, mas era importante saber qual é a orientação da presidência de Malta para a nossa relação com a Rússia. Como se sabe, há uma discussão intensa entre os vários Estados-membros europeus a propósito de qual deve ser a política europeia para a Rússia agora e no futuro, e era importante perceber qual é a orientação europeia, porque neste momento parece não haver nenhuma. Era importante que a presidência maltesa contribuísse para essa clarificação. São mais dois pontos, muito rápidos. No que diz respeito à política de defesa, nós, no Partido Social Democrata, acolhemos com muita preocupação e inquietação os sinais que estão a ser dados relativamente à integridade, à credibilidade e à eficácia da NATO, sabendo que a defesa europeia depende ainda muito da credibilidade e da eficácia desta organização, gostaríamos de saber qual é a orientação da presidência maltesa para estes desafios que se anunciam, não só por parte da administração americana, mas de outras fontes também, para agora e para os próximos meses. Tem havido uma discussão mais ou menos vaga a propósito de integração, do aprofundamento da integração europeia no que diz respeito às questões de defesa. Falou-se inclusivamente na criação do exército comum. Gostaria de saber qual é a orientação da presidência maltesa nestes temas que são fundamentais. Finalmente, e termino, não há nenhuma menção nas prioridades maltesas relativamente ao caso, ao processo do Brexit, da saída do Reino Unido da União Europeia. E isso causa alguma perplexidade, na medida em que todos os dias nós temos novidades quanto ao andamento deste processo, não novidades do ponto de vista formal, mas certamente do ponto de vista informal. E as novidades que vamos recebendo são, para ser eufemístico, bastante desagradáveis. É a posição do Partido Social Democrata desde o início, desde os resultados do referendo em Inglaterra, que gostaríamos que houvesse uma solução o mais conciliadora possível entre o Reino Unido e a União Europeia. Mas a subida de tom, a escalada de tom, tanto da parte do governo inglês como da parte das instituições europeias, são, no mínimo, preocupantes. Uma vez mais, existe um plano, existe um roteiro por parte da União Europeia para levar a cabo essas negociações? E este é o último ponto, a última linha do último ponto. A saída do Reino Unido, que se adivinha, terá consequências imediatas no orçamento da União Europeia. Uma vez mais, não existe nenhuma clarificação por parte da União Europeia de quais são as possibilidades resultantes do processo de negociação de saída do Reino Unido relativamente ao impacto orçamental que haverá certamente. Gostaríamos de saber se a presidência maltesa irá contribuir para a clarificação destes cenários. Muito obrigado.
Muito obrigada, Sr. Deputado Miguel Morgado. Mr. Ambassador, do you want to answer right now?
Yes.
Okay, you have the floor. Thank you.
When I said yes, of course I'll do my best, because yours was an overview. First of all, I appreciate the fact that you had a positive response by way of reaction to what I had to say, and I thank you for that. I have listened to you with attention. Of course, there are various issues that you have mentioned. As I said before, the fact that we mentioned what are the priorities as far as Malta is concerned, it doesn't mean that there are no other priorities that we have to factor in. For example, you mentioned economic policy in the European Union. Definitely, we shall not forget the fact that there are countries like Portugal who are still struggling to stabilize their economic position. And whenever this subject was brought up in Brussels, Malta always looked favorably on any initiative taken to help these countries. I mean, Portugal was not one among those countries who said, look, you gave us help in terms of a bailout, for example, and then suddenly, when this bailout was put into action, suddenly there were countries who said, look, we don't owe anything back to Europe, not even the loans that they have been put to the disposition of the countries concerned. So we had Maltese citizens say, look, how is this going to happen? We have spent something like 180 million out of our reserves to help a particular country, for example. We are ready to help them out, but we cannot then say and hear that as far as they were concerned, instead of saying, okay, you're helping us, we don't feel obliged to pay anything back. Portugal did not act that way, fortunately, and I can promise you that we'll do our best to help you around. Whenever there was a possibility of extending these loan agreements, these possibilities, we are always in favor of extending them. And we have, I can assure that we have no intention whatsoever of penalizing any country at all, if you put it that way. You mentioned, for example, the Capital Markets Union and other aspects of regarding the single market. Well, of course, the Capital Markets Union will also be given its due importance. This concerns a plan of the EC to mobilize capital to reinforce what is called the third pillar of the investment plan for Europe. Because despite progress during the last half century, during the last 50 years, Europe's capital markets are still relatively underdeveloped and fragmented. So more integrated capital markets will lead to efficiency, to gains, and will support Europe's ability to fund growth and to make the financial system more resilient. So it will also offer new opportunities for savers and for inspectors alike. I cannot touch upon all the relevant and important points that you have mentioned, but I will certainly pass them on to my superiors. But it doesn't mean that we are forgetting, for example, Libya, which is so vital and so important for us. But we've got to understand that Libya has got something like three governments, separate governments, each contending for recognition. There is one that is officially recognized by the UN, but it's not recognized in its own country as well. There's another side taken by General Haftar, and there's another government in Tripoli. There are countless militias, armed militias, as a result of what took place in the Gaddafi downfall. And certainly it is a matter of great concern, and we'll do our utmost to concern ourselves with Libya. You mentioned also Syria, but you also you mentioned even NATO. You've got to consider that Europe moves, as far as foreign policy is concerned, tries to do things collectively, and it should be so, because if Europe shows itself to be divided, then of course its enforceability and its force would of course be a weak one. You mentioned Brexit, and you said that I haven't mentioned Brexit, and that I much less that I have mentioned no plans about Brexit. Well, my answer to that is that we will really be concerned about Brexit, which is going to happen. I should imagine so, because even today, I mean, the process from the UK, United Kingdom side has been stalled for a moment, because the decision of the Supreme Court in the United Kingdom said that Parliament is supreme, that everything has got to be approved by Parliament before triggering Article 50, which officially sets the process for this divorce between the United Kingdom and the European Union to take place. And certainly, like Portugal, Malta, which had a connection with the United Kingdom for 164 years, is also interested that, as the UK Minister for Exiting, as he is called, said, I think it was yesterday, it was reported in the media, I said, we do not intend to punish anyone, and we don't expect to be punished to undergo this process. But we cannot talk in terms of plans before this process sets in, before the article in question is formally invoked and put into place. Our government has made it plain that it will act as an honest broker in these negotiations. That will be difficult. That will certainly take more than our 6 months. They could take as long as 2 years from the moment they start. And we do not exactly know how they are going to proceed. But of course, we are imagining and expecting to have an honourable solution to us all. But since the European Union, not just Malta, took a stand with regard to the single market, the UK Prime Minister said that, okay, that we cannot consider the single market as something that can be looked at a la carte, accepting something which is favorable to us and rejecting something like having this freedom of workers and freedom of labor and freedom of supplies and freedom of capital, the way that we want it. And it's something which has got to be negotiated, the single market. We've got to take a firm stand because we have to present a united front, without necessarily meaning by that we are going to penalize or punish something which has been decided upon by the British people. I think you mentioned something about the sea as well. As I said, it's a matter of concern. I know that there are areas which I have not touched about, but I can assure you that are factoring in the various committees and working of the EU, which regards, for example, fishing, how much you can fish, and that there be a monitoring of all illegal fishing, because unless it is monitored, illegal fishing is detrimental to the whole of the members of the European Union, and in particular to Portugal as well. You mentioned the European neighbourhood policy. The European neighbourhood policy governs the EU's relations with 16 of our closest friends, both eastern and the southern neighbours, and there is what is called a policy called the European neighbourhood policy, which has been launched in 2003 and developed a year later with the objective of avoiding dividing lines between the EU, the enlarged EU, and its neighbours, and instead strengthening the prosperity and security for all. There was a review of this policy in 2011 as a result of the Arab Spring uprisings. We have started, and we shall continue, when we say we, it's the European Union, a stabilization process of the region in political, economic, and security matters as well. And the key element of the ENP is to strengthen the role of civil societies, actors in reforms and democratic areas. And when we see when we mention the 16 ENP countries, we are talking about countries from Armenia, Azerbaijan, Egypt, Georgia, right till Ukraine. Certainly, we are concerned what took place in the Ukraine, and this is not something which a question about Malta, it's a question about the European Union and the stand taken by the European Union as far as the Ukraine and the Russian Federation is concerned, that there was an outright condemnation of the occupation of Crimea, which led to a number of sanctions which are still in place. We've got to factor in, of course, but it's useless talking about them now, because we've got to follow results of elections taking place in the Netherlands, elections taking place in France. Are we going to move from one way of seeing things in political terms, moving towards the right, for example? We've got to see what the results are going to be. These two important elections in two important states will be followed by elections in Germany and then possibly in Italy as well. Certainly we won't forget what is taking place in Turkey at democratic level. Of course, Syria, as far as the EU is concerned, you've got to take stock of what is taking place there. But finally, you've got to take stock also of the fact that in the United States the new president has been ushered in, and he's got his own ideas of the way things should be done or things should be moved. We don't want to prejudge anyone. We work with everyone as a union, and we go with an open mind. I hope.
Thank you, Mr. Ambassador. Tem agora a palavra o Sr. Deputado do Partido Socialista, Vitalino Canas.
Muito obrigado, Sra. Presidente. Sra. Embaixadora, em nome do Partido Socialista, damos-lhe as boas-vindas a esta Assembleia da República e gostaríamos de endereçar os nossos votos de felicidades para a Presidência de Malta da União Europeia, a felicidade da Presidência maltesa da União Europeia será, obviamente, a felicidade da União Europeia num momento muito conturbado, de insegurança, de incertezas, algumas delas provenientes de sítios de onde talvez não as esperássemos aqui há alguns tempos atrás, e, portanto, felicidades para a Presidência maltesa. Até porque, pela exposição...
Peço desculpa à interrupção, Sr. Deputado, mas estamos com um problema com a tradução. Não, o Sr. Embaixador não está a ouvir a tradução.
I could understand more or less even if I haven't studied Portuguese through Italian. But still...
A little to see what is happening with translation. Muito bem, temos o incidente ultrapassado. I'm very sorry for this incident. So, Sr. Deputado Vitalino Canas, continua no uso da palavra.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente. Prosseguindo então, é fácil também, pela exposição que o Sr. Embaixador aqui fez, perceber que as preocupações, as perspectivas, os problemas, as aspirações que Portugal tem em relação à União Europeia são muito similares em relação àquelas que são de Malta. Por outro lado, permitam-me também fazer aqui um ligeiro comentário mais particular, tendo em conta o partido de que provenho, para dizer que existe uma proximidade grande entre o meu partido, o Partido Socialista, partido do governo hoje em Portugal, com o partido que governa Malta. Nem sempre isso na Europa é um indicador preciso de união de pensamento, mas neste caso creio que existem perspectivas muito aproximadas. Algumas das questões que nós gostaríamos aqui de enfatizar, algumas preocupações também gostaríamos de manifestar, já foram feitas anteriormente, mas a circunstância de sermos partidos diferentes leva a que, em alguns casos, não estranho, portanto, Sr. Embaixador, em alguns casos se repitam aqui questões que já foram suscitadas. Queria começar por referir e sublinhar que também nós, Partido Socialista, em relação às questões do mercado interno, perfilhamos algumas preocupações, obviamente algumas expectativas, mas também algumas preocupações, e, para não me alongar demasiado em relação a um tópico que já aqui foi suscitado e debatido, também nós temos uma expectativa muito vincada sobre a possibilidade de se finalmente viabilizarem as interligações energéticas entre a Península Ibérica e o resto da Europa. Portugal é talvez um dos países cujo desenvolvimento, cujo crescimento, cujas perspectivas de investimento mais dependem das questões energéticas, tendo em conta que o não acesso ao mercado europeu por parte de Portugal, em alguns casos, encarece a nossa energia, noutros casos, inviabiliza que nós possamos disponibilizar a nossa energia aos outros países da União Europeia. Portanto, entendemos que esse é um tópico muito importante e sublinho, sabendo que ele já aqui foi referido. Em relação às questões relacionadas com as migrações, queria começar por sublinhar e referir que Portugal tem manifestado, ao longo de toda esta crise migratória, esta última crise migratória, tem manifestado toda a solidariedade e toda a disponibilidade em relação aos países que mais sofrem com esta crise, designadamente Malta, mas também os outros. Portugal tem sido um dos países que tem procurado ser parte da solução para este problema e manifestar solidariedade para a resolução desse problema, no sentido de, inclusive, retirar dos ombros dos países mais afetados também responsabilidades. Infelizmente, alguns dos mecanismos, algumas das políticas, algumas das iniciativas que já foram definidas estão atrasadas na sua implementação, mas em relação a isso, Portugal, o que tem a dizer, o governo português assim o tem referido e creio que existe algum consenso interno em relação a esse aspecto, o que Portugal tem a dizer é que continuaremos a ser solidários com aqueles países que têm sofrido maior com a crise migratória e a estar disponíveis para colaborar na solução para esse problema. Queria, contudo, deixar-lhe aqui duas questões. O Sr. Embaixador falou da Cimeira de La Valeta, importante, sobretudo pela perspectiva que tem de procurar conter o problema dentro das fronteiras de onde ele surge, mas referiu aqui também, se bem percebi, que ainda havia algumas dificuldades relacionadas com a captação ou reunião de fundos necessários para o follow-up dessa cimeira, para algumas das iniciativas e dos programas que ficaram definidos. Gostaria de saber qual é que é o ponto da situação em relação a isso e quais são as dificuldades, embora possa imaginar algumas delas, mas quais são as dificuldades que têm surgido nesse campo. Segunda questão, também relacionada com o tema das migrações, é o tema da situação na Líbia nesse aspecto. Nós tínhamos o receio que, uma vez alguma contenção obtida na rota da Turquia e da Grécia, havia o receio de que pudesse ser a rota da Líbia a ser mais utilizada nos tempos mais próximos, digamos assim. Creio que isso se verificou relativamente, talvez não com não tanta intensidade como quanto se esperava no último verão e nos últimos meses, mas verificou-se. Mas gostava também de saber qual é que é o ponto da situação e qual tem sido o impacto que isso tem tido ao nível do seu país, Malta. Também, por outro lado, gostaria que nos fizesse aqui uma apreciação, ou que nos desse aqui a sua apreciação em relação às relações entre a União Europeia e a Turquia, designadamente a implementação do acordo entre a União Europeia e a Turquia, e qual é que é a sua perspectiva e a perspectiva da presidência maltesa em relação a esse tema. Queria sublinhar aqui que me pareceu, pelo menos dos documentos que foram distribuídos e da sua intervenção, me pareceu que não fez nenhuma referência, embora a sua exposição tenha sido rica e muito completa, e obviamente que a agradecemos, mas não fez nenhuma referência em relação às questões da integração, designadamente ao ponto da situação dos países candidatos. Sabemos que isso obviamente está, nesta altura, não está a avançar com rapidez, não há perspectiva de integração de outros países nos próximos 2 anos, 3 anos e se calhar mais, mas gostava de saber se isso, durante a presidência portuguesa, será um tema completamente fora de agenda ou se existe alguma perspectiva também a ver alguma evolução, ainda que uma evolução não muito significativa nos vários dossiês quanto à integração de novos Estados. Falou do pilar social, foi o último pilar que referiu na sua intervenção. Quero dizer-lhe que o Partido Socialista está naturalmente de acordo com as prioridades, tal como aliás acontece com as outras prioridades que referiu, mas está de acordo com as prioridades referentes ao pilar social. Gostava que associasse, pedia-lhe que associasse aquilo que nos disse em relação às prioridades da presidência maltesa com os recentes desenvolvimentos positivos, entendemos nós, verificados ao nível do Parlamento Europeu, com a aprovação de um relatório sobre o pilar dos direitos sociais, com um conjunto de indicadores ou de indicações muito interessantes na nossa perspectiva sobre a evolução que pode haver nesse contexto, e também quais é que são as perspectivas que a Presidência de Malta tem quanto às iniciativas que a Comissão Europeia está vinculada a apresentar nos próximos meses, justamente no contexto desse pilar dos direitos sociais. Manifestamos também acordo, justamente por causa daquela ideia de solidariedade que já aqui expressei, manifestamos também acordo em relação à revisão da regulação de Dublin. No sentido, justamente, e já foi enfatizado por si, mas gostaríamos aqui de apoiar esse aspecto, justamente no sentido de evitar que os maiores encargos e às vezes excessivos encargos decorrentes da chegada de requerentes de asilo sejam assumidos pelos Estados da primeira chegada, da entrada dessas pessoas. Sabemos que isso tem provocado problemas gravíssimos ao nível de alguns Estados-membros, sobretudo do sul da Europa, entre os quais se inclui Malta. Portugal está de acordo com a revisão dessa regulação de Dublin no sentido de melhorar a distribuição de responsabilidades e não fazer com que essas responsabilidades estejam apenas entregues, às vezes, a Estados que não as podem assumir totalmente. Para não me alongar mais, já foi aqui referido o tema do Brexit, e o Sr. Embaixador já teve também o ensejo de se pronunciar sobre esse tema. Finalmente, gostaria, dentro da sua intervenção, que foi rica e com muitos temas, mas não podemos aqui focá-los todos, como é óbvio, gostaria aqui também de lhe deixar uma questão em relação aos acordos comerciais. Sabemos que vai haver, certamente, novos desenvolvimentos no futuro. Todos vimos ontem o presidente norte-americano a assinar um decreto executivo no sentido de sair do acordo Ásia-Pacífico. Sabemos, obviamente, que vai haver repercussões resultantes disso, repercussões que nos afetarão todos. A minha perspectiva, mas isso é algo que teremos de discutir dentro da Europa, a minha perspectiva é que, nestas circunstâncias, o vácuo deixado pelos Estados Unidos, em parte, terá de ser ocupado pela Europa na relação com os Estados da Ásia-Pacífico. Mas, obviamente, isso implicará que a União Europeia também se defina em alguns aspectos. Em relação ao CETA, que, por acaso, está hoje, ou já foi hoje, aprovado numa comissão do Parlamento Europeu e que irá depois ao plenário do Parlamento Europeu para a aprovação, gostaria de saber também qual é que é a perspectiva da presidência maltesa e já agora também qual é que é a perspectiva da presidência maltesa em relação a todos os outros acordos de natureza comercial que estão a ser negociados pela União Europeia. Muito obrigado, Sr. Embaixador.
Muito obrigada, Sr. Deputado. Tem a palavra o Sr. Embaixador para a resposta.
Well, I thank the honourable gentleman for his intervention, where he mentioned quite rightly that there are common affinities between the way the Socialist Party sees things and the way that the present Maltese government sees things as well. And this augurs well we try to, of course, during our presidency, to rise above these political considerations, because we realize that we've got to reach out to all the various points of views that are held within the European Union. You mentioned things regarding the internal market, and I will definitely promise that I will pass on your concerns, for example, with regard to the finalization of agreements touching energy and the lack of access that Portugal has in order to sell or pass on a part of its extra energy to other parts of Europe, and definitely it is something which is quite right and legitimate. It doesn't mean that because I have not entered into the specific details of things, it doesn't mean that they are not being going to be seen to. So this, the energy sector and the financial sector, of course, will be seen to as well. There are meetings taking place under various perspectives. For example, I leave here on Thursday, and our Prime Minister, like other heads of government, will be in Lisbon this coming Friday, and I'm sure that we'll have time to revisit certain points that you have mentioned. Once again, you have touched about migration, and we also have noted that Portugal, in more ways than one, have showed solidarity along these lines. Because we've got to understand that unless we share this, some call it burden, some call it opportunity sharing. But regardless of where you stand, it is a reality that whether we like it or not, we have got to take stock of it. You mentioned, and quite rightly too, I cannot help agreeing, that remedial measures on the part of the European Union were rather late and delayed. We had been mentioning this matter to the previous EU Commissioner, Madame Malmström, and all the time our response from the European Union side was always the same, that it's not time yet, that it hasn't reached a crisis. And when the crisis crisis is reached, then we'll offer help. She mentioned the allocation of funds. Okay, they would help up to a certain extent, but we were not interested in just receiving funds to keep so many thousands of migrants. Staying in one's country. I mean, this is a problem which has got to be shared by all and all. There are countries, for example, Denmark, who has made it very, very difficult to receive migrants by way of relocation. There are countries like Slovakia. I don't want to name countries, but there are countries who just refuse on a number of pretexts. That because their social fabric, their traditions are going to change as a result of this relocation. So they said no, and they erected even Hungary artificial walls, just like is being mentioned that is going to happen in the United States with Mexico. So this is Europe. And when we talk about relocation, just as I mentioned that Italy alone had to accept something like 185,000 persons in 1 year, the amount of relocated migrants that were allotted, for example, to Hungary, I believe it was something like 1,200. So it was in the end of the world, but they said no. And and you've got to reach a negotiation on that point as well, and you've got to see that it is implemented. There was also a measure taken by the European Union. It said, okay, if you want to accept having physically a person relocated by way of a migrant, you've got to pay, I don't know how many thousands and thousands, I think something like, I don't know whether it's a quarter or half a million euros for each and every migrant that has to stay in the country where it has touched port. And they said no, because we cannot pay all that money. So some sort of a compromise solution has got to be reached. And we are talking here about decisions which, rightly or wrongly, have already been accepted. So there you are. Of course, we haven't blocked any sort of progress with regard to the progress of accession. I know that these are ongoing talks. As I said, the presidency by Malta, like all presidencies, it will chair various talks and negotiations. But of course, there is the European Union as a whole. There's the Commission on matters dealing with such things, because these are decisions that affect the whole of the Union. So, for example, if you mention Turkey, you've got to take into consideration that, as far as Turkey is concerned, things have developed in such a way as a result of the failed coup that you've got to take stock of this situation at democratic level, for example. But it doesn't mean that that you don't have to continue the dialogue with Turkey. Of course, by all means. You mentioned, for example, the Dublin rules. I know that in spite of what you have said, sir, and what Malta and Portuguese might think about the need for a revision, there are countries which wouldn't agree at all with any kind of tempering or changing in any sort of way these Dublin rules, because it suits them. But this is a union which is for all of them. You asked me what is the position of migration in Malta. Well, frankly, as a result of a policy that was adopted in order to avoid so many people perishing at sea and drowning, there is various operations financed by the European Union, the Euronaval operations, the Sophia operation, and so on. As a result of which, as soon as boats emerging from North Africa, they are taken to Italy. And I don't know how Italy can take all these thousands of persons, but there it is. So that is the position as far as it goes. But it has to be seen to, and it has to be ultimately solved as well. I would like to enter into the other various areas that you mentioned, but I don't think that we have enough time. But what I can promise you is that we will definitely see to what you have been saying by way of concerns. The previous speaker mentioned, for example, their concern with the stability of euro, and I can promise you that in a hour's time a conference is going to take place here in Lisbon, and we have got to listen to what Portugal is proposing by way of euro stabilization. So, of course, this is not something that starts with the Maltese presidency.
Mr. Ambassador, excuse me, yes. I have to say that the translator have to go. So we have to do the questions and the answers very quickly, okay, to ensure that the translation will be done. Because for us it's difficult, yes, to arrange now someone that could do the work. So if you don't mind, e se os senhores deputados não se incomodam, faremos as perguntas mais sintéticas. Falta agora fazer a senhora deputada Isabel Pires, falta o senhor deputado Filipe Anacoreta Correia e depois as respostas a estes dois senhores deputados. Por isso vamos tentar ser o mais sintéticos possível para assegurar ainda a presença da tradução do intérprete, a que agradeço a gentileza de prolongar mais um pouco a sua permanência na cabine de tradução e assegurá-la. Muito obrigada.
Well, just one, thank you. Just one final note. You mentioned what is going to happen to our trade agreements with the United States. Well, one day in politics they say is already a lot, and since yesterday a lot of things have already happened, and things are going to happen in successive days. So let's see how it progresses. But certainly they've got to be taken into consideration, even eventually Brexit and the talks that are going to be held between Theresa May and President Trump. And we've got to follow very closely to what is taking place. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ambassador. Tem agora a palavra a senhora deputada Isabel Pires, do Bloco de Esquerda.
Obrigada, Sr. Presidente, Sr. Embaixador, cumprimentá-lo e à sua delegação, sendo então bastante breve dentro do possível. As prioridades que nos são apresentadas pela Presidência Maltesa vão, de facto, em linha com as políticas e os objetivos seguidos desde há alguns anos pela União e, portanto, desse ponto de vista, para nós não há uma novidade maior. No entanto, existem dois ou três temas que nos suscitam algumas preocupações que, da nossa parte, não são preocupações novas, temos vindo a levantá-las já bastantes vezes e que importa perceber, da nossa parte, como é que a Presidência de Malta vai lidar com estas questões. Algumas delas, entretanto, já respondeu e, portanto, serei um pouco mais breve. Em primeiro lugar, e conjugando a questão da migração com a questão da segurança, porque o próprio documento que foi enviado faz essa ligação, a nosso ver, de forma errada. Achamos que, politicamente, para o Estado em que alguns países da União Europeia estão a caminhar fortemente para situações de chegada ao poder de partidos de cariz mais xenófobo, por exemplo, é perigoso politicamente colocar na mesma frase migração e terrorismo e, portanto, deixar que para nós isso é uma preocupação e às vezes a semântica e as palavras fazem diferença naquilo que é a visão política das coisas. Sobre a migração, deixar uma preocupação que nós temos relativamente às alterações que vão sendo propostas, nomeadamente no que toca à proteção de dados e foi falada aqui na sua intervenção, o aumentar a troca de informação entre as autoridades que estão nas fronteiras, a controlar as fronteiras, e por outro lado as autoridades, as law enforcement, portanto polícias, etc. E temos sido alertados e alguma documentação também de organismos ligados à União Europeia, nomeadamente o Working Party 29, que tem tido alguns relatórios sobre isso, sobre a preocupação que levanta utilizar e agregar numa agência única todos os dados e informações das pessoas que chegam a território europeu e que inclusivamente possam ser utilizadas enquanto base de dados criminal, e isto estamos a falar inclusivamente de crianças a partir de 6 anos, e isso preocupa-nos porque estamos a colocar e estamos a dar o sinal político de que qualquer pessoa que entre no espaço e em território europeu, venha ele por motivos económicos, venha ele porque precisa de asilo, porque o seu país está em guerra, poderão eventualmente a médio ou a curto ou a longo prazo ser vistos como criminosos porque estão numa base de dados desse caráter. E, portanto, deixar esse alerta que nos parece importante. Sobre as questões de segurança, da parte do Bloco de Esquerda também temos vindo a levantar preocupações e da nossa parte achamos errado uma política que tem sido seguida de cariz mais militarista, de fechamento que a União Europeia tem vindo a seguir no âmbito desta crise, que de facto tem, que o que tem em comum entre todos nós é que nos preocupa o lado humanitário e a crise humanitária que esta crise tem revelado. As outras questões que tínhamos já foram, entretanto, respondidas, uma relativamente ao Brexit, já nos falou, também sobre as questões dos acordos comerciais, que nos parece ser uma boa altura, sempre que existe uma renovação na Presidência, que possa ser revista a posição também relativamente ao CETA, que para nós nos levanta muitas preocupações de segurança alimentar, relativamente a questões laborais, de ambiente, etc. Por último, para terminar, deixar uma nota que não poderíamos deixar passar, que tem a ver com o pilar social, com a prioridade social que nos deu também na sua apresentação e que para nós é muito importante. O exemplo também de Malta deveria ser seguido, nomeadamente recentemente, com a criminalização de terapias de conversão para pessoas LGBT. Isso foi um passo importante e deve ser visto como um exemplo para outros países também, essa luta por uma maior inclusão a nível social. E sobre a questão da igualdade entre homens e mulheres, deixar apenas uma nota que será com certeza um trabalho ainda muito profundo e alargado teremos que fazer, mas não basta que existam diretivas para que as mulheres estejam também nas direções de empresas. Temos que ir mais além, temos que ir à raiz do problema da desigualdade salarial que não existe nas fábricas e em outros locais de trabalho, onde os salários já de si são baixos, mas para as mulheres ainda são mais baixos e, portanto, não basta apenas. Obviamente que percebemos que é um exemplo que pode ser seguido como uma boa prática, mas terá ainda que ser percorrido um longo caminho e nesse âmbito estaremos com certeza dispostos a ajudar nesse debate e a dar ideias também para esta luta.
Muito obrigada, Sra. Deputada. Tem agora a palavra o Sr. Deputado Filipe Anacoreta Correia, do CDS-PP, de forma a que as perguntas de ambos os senhores deputados, últimos intervenientes, sejam respondidas conjuntamente pelo Sr. Embaixador, uma vez que estou convencida que os senhores deputados não precisarão de tradução simultânea para ouvir as respostas do Sr. Embaixador e assim ficará a intérprete livre de acabar o seu trabalho. Tem a palavra então o Sr. Deputado Filipe Anacoreta Correia.
Sr. Embaixador, muito obrigado. Sr. Presidente, muito obrigado. Também, Sr. Embaixador, agradeço a sua intervenção e creio que hoje já aqui muito debatemos. Não me queria prolongar muito, até porque algumas das questões do CDS-PP estão em linha com algumas outras que aqui foram expressas por colegas meus, de outros partidos. Eu não queria deixar de dizer, Sr. Embaixador, em primeiro lugar, desejar as maiores felicidades à Presidência de Malta, à sua Presidência. Consideramos que nós, de facto, na Europa, estamos a viver um tempo muito desafiante. Malta tem a oportunidade de exercer esta função da Presidência numa altura em que, de facto, estamos confrontados com enormes questões sobre o nosso futuro. Mas também não deixa de ser curioso e não podemos ignorar que é também um semestre que está muito marcado pelo calendário eleitoral na Europa, em países como a França e como a Alemanha, e nessa medida nós também sentimos que alguns dos silêncios relativamente àquilo que são as prioridades da Presidência e que foram aqui anunciados têm também muito a ver com isso, com certo realismo, de perceber que neste contexto eleitoral dificilmente algumas das questões prioritárias, sem dúvida, poderão ter grande enquadramento. E essa circunstância não pode a nós também deixar de nos levantar logo, de expressar alguma preocupação, porque, na verdade, se nós vamos na Europa de calendário em calendário eleitoral a adiar o confronto com algumas questões que são da maior importância para todos nós, nós teremos muita dificuldade de acompanhar a rapidez com que a evolução no mundo e na política no mundo nos desafiam também a adaptar-nos. Por isso, sabemos que vivemos hoje numa Europa política muito diferente. Alguns dos partidos que se estão a afirmar eleitoralmente são contra o projeto europeu, em países tão importantes como a França. Vemos que isso hoje representa um peso eleitoral bastante expressivo, veremos como é que evolui. Creio que não se deve cair no erro que se tem feito no passado e os responsáveis europeus não devem cair no erro de falar muito sobre isso e afirmar que querer-se substituir à soberania das populações locais e deixar os países terem os seus processos e não termos em relação a isso grande tipo de ansiedade, mas nós não podemos ignorar por exemplo, em países como Portugal, atualmente a solução do governo está assente em partidos que tradicionalmente têm uma visão do projeto europeu muito diferente daquela que tem sido maioritária na população portuguesa. E essa circunstância é uma circunstância extremamente desafiante e, portanto, nós vemos aqui os silêncios desta agenda refletindo de alguma forma esta circunstância. Compreendemos, mas não deixamos também de manifestar a nossa preocupação profunda. Em relação a várias questões que aqui foram levantadas, e muito brevemente, Sr. Embaixador, nós temos consciência que em relação ao grande número de refugiados, foi uma pequena percentagem, mesmo muito pequena, que foi efetivamente distribuído, refugiados foram distribuídos pelos diferentes países, estamos a falar de cerca de 8 mil para 160 mil, e esta é qualquer coisa que nos preocupa, e o Sr. Embaixador, enfim, no curto espaço de tempo que tem, se tiver a oportunidade de se referir a isso, queremos que seja também muito importante. Relativamente ao mercado único de energia, nós partilhamos aqui as preocupações que já foram aqui referidas por diferentes colegas, diferentes bancadas. De facto, a falta de interligação na Europa é para nós um problema que não pode ser adiado e, portanto, esperamos que a Presidência acompanhe esta nossa preocupação. Relativamente às medidas de segurança, creio que seria importante perceber em que medidas concretas poderão ser necessárias serem implementadas na partilha e na troca de informações, os serviços de inteligência, entre os diferentes serviços europeus. Finalmente, Sr. Ministro, enfim, relativamente a muitas questões que o Sr. Embaixador, relativamente a muitas das questões que se referiu, como as políticas de vizinhança, a questão também marítima, sabe que para nós essa é uma questão essencial, nós partilhamos essa agenda, mas não queríamos deixar de referir que relativamente à inclusão social, ela, tal como está elencada pela Presidência de Malta, nos parece manifestamente insuficiente. Numa altura em que nós estamos a viver grandes desafios de desemprego, numa altura em que nós verificamos grandes dificuldades de conciliação do trabalho com a vida familiar, numa altura em que a natalidade e o equilíbrio demográfico está fortemente posto em causa na Europa, a nós parece-nos de alguma forma estranho que se elenque a questão da LGBTIQ como tão decisiva para o nosso futuro. Compreendemos que, naturalmente, no âmbito dos esforços de integração é também uma matéria a ter em conta, mas, de qualquer maneira, parece-nos um pouco despropositado que ela seja elencada com o destaque que tem sido. Esperemos que isso não seja um sinal de algum desfoque dos responsáveis europeus em relação aos problemas que nós, cidadãos europeus, estamos a viver e as famílias estão a viver, as empresas estão a viver e, portanto, a única coisa que podemos esperar, e como comecei por dizer, é que esta, de alguma forma, e apesar do calendário eleitoral, possa ser uma oportunidade para a Presidência maltesa ajudar-nos, a nós europeus, a dar passos em frente neste projeto que continuamos a considerar da maior importância. Muito obrigado.
Muito obrigada, Sr. Deputado. Vai agora responder o Sr. Embaixador a estas questões. Muito obrigada à Sra. Intérprete pela ter assegurado o serviço de interpretação até ao momento. Muito obrigada.
Well, first of all, I thank Madame Filipa Ferreira for the good work she put on as a translator in an area where there are very much technical points that they had to cover by way of translation. I really thank her for her being so magnanimous and so generous to come to our help, because we're only asked to provide an interpreter just a few days ago, last Friday evening. But anyway, that was a hurdle that we thankfully, thanks to her, that we surpassed. The two last speakers mentioned again areas that we share with them by way of concern, but I also noticed that, and this is the reality of the situation. They mentioned things that are seen from a different way. I mentioned, for example, the last point with regard to the LGBT rights. There was the penultimate speaker who complimented our government for becoming one of the leading exponents in LGBT. But of course, when we say this, it doesn't mean that these rights are being put forward to the exclusion or to the punishment or isolation of other social aspects. Indeed, it is not the case. I mean, we are there in order to see that all rights by way of social inclusion are respected and seen to. And that is why our country gave so much importance to groups which had no voice, or if the voice that they had was a contrary voice against their very existence. You might not agree with these policies, but there they are. We recognize same-sex marriage. We recognize the adoption by these unions as well. I mean, life in Malta has continued to go, and nothing really revolutionary has come about in terms of practical reality. And we are hoping that the good experience that we had, it can be shared by other countries as well in a positive way, without imposing these results necessarily upon all others. A question of seeing how they worked and whether they should work in other countries as well. Mentions again were made of both migration and security, and I don't think it is quite right, although I know that at populist level this has been put forward. I don't think it is quite right or fair to associate migration with security measures. Of course, when you have this influx of huge migratory flows passing from one country to another, it creates problem. But you cannot generalize to start with, because people coming from the sub-Saharan region is one thing. People coming from Syria, although they can both qualify as refugees or asylum seekers, doesn't mean that the problems that they might entail are similar. So it's very difficult to distinguish one lot with another. For example, one area that should have been looked upon, but which was, I don't know whether it was the right word, ignored or not, that a distinction should be made between the asylum seeker and the refugee seeker and economic migrants. Because with regard to economic migrants, that is an area which is of great concern to a lot of people, which has led to xenophobia, which has led to racial intolerance, because people feel that they are threatened. And not only that, you've got countries, for example, Denmark, who have showed its concern in aspects which are considered a fundamental human right, the right to family, because it is interpreted in a way that if there is a mother and a child who have managed to cross over to Europe, then because of this element of the need for family reunification, the result is that the rest of the family are expected to join them in Europe. And this is something which is frowned upon, which is not accepted by certain states. So the idea also is that as much as possible, that is where the Valletta summit has been mentioned by us, because the way forward would be to try and see what the problem is, but this takes time. It's not going to be solved in the short term. You've got to see what the problems are locally and see to it that they are addressed. I spoke about focusing by way of concurrent efforts on legal migration, because when we started to implement certain aspects of this Valletta summit, there are five states involved, Senegal and so on. They were more interested in getting a legalized, accepted way of traveling from Africa to Europe in a legal manner. But we're also concerned telling them that that is not enough. We should see to it that whatever you need in terms of infrastructure, in terms of education, in terms of working skills to keep persons from not crossing over whether legally or much less in an illegal way. So these problems take time. Quite rightly, the last speaker, honourable speaker, mentioned that we cannot wait for the calendar of events to take place, because if we do that, we never get anywhere. And that is precisely why Malta has insisted that at least let identify certain areas, even if they don't sound as if they are the end of the world by way of achievements, but at least they are doable. And we can go along by implementing them, like for example the collection of data, the border police, and so on. Of course, when you are at the negotiating table, a point like the one that was rightly mentioned, it should be considered as well, whether a single agency like ETIAS or whatever is enough, because there are different concerns. The children, for example, should they be put under the same roof, so to say? When we say that gender imbalance should be respected in company leadership, are we saying that we do not see that there should be equal pay for women? No, we are not saying that. But this is something which, the second point, the equal pay for women, is something which is more obvious, I think, than to what I was mentioning before. So, I think I tried my best to answer as many questions as possible, but definitely it was nice listening to you. And I think that the ability to push forward with our priorities depends on these various factors, even the elections, because we would want to know, whether we like it or not, of how the political spectrum is going to move, if at all, because that would be an eye-opener. And we want to measure our performance by our ability to deliver political solutions to meet as much as possible the concerns of the European citizen. And I think with your support, which was evident here, and solidarity, we aim to deliver something which is tangible by way of a result. And in this spirit, we look forward with optimism towards the successful outcome of our presidency during these 6 months. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ambassador. It was a pleasure and an honor to have you here in the Assembly of the Republica to speak about the priorities of the Malta presidency. We wish you, our Committee of European Affairs, wish the best for the presidency during the next 6 months. So, muito obrigada, Srs. Deputados. Terminamos agora a audição com o Sr. Embaixador de Malta. Fazemos uma pausa de 3 minutos para prosseguirmos a nossa reunião. Muito obrigada. A moment. Thank you, Mr. Volta Valia, for your presence here. It was a pleasure to have you here once again in our Parliament. E muito obrigada também, doutora Ana Domingos, pela sua ajuda e pela sua presença.
Thank you.